Hallo. Den nächsten Slot kann ich gar nicht anmoderieren, ohne die Maskerade zu gefährden. Es geht um Vampire Bloodlines 2. Der Slot wird jetzt in Englisch stattfinden, denn ich habe zwei großartige Gäste hier, die leider kein Deutsch sprechen, aber das ist ja kein Problem. Welcome, guys. Good that you're here. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Sure, I'm Ian Thomas. I'm the narrative director for the Chinese Room on Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2. And this is...
Hi, I'm Jay Hicks. I'm the design director.
Good to see you guys. I'm very happy that you're here. Just to make sure that everyone's at the same page, would you like to talk a bit about your game, what it's all about?
Sure. So Bloodlines 2 is a game in which a very old vampire wakes up in Seattle, not knowing why they're there or what they're doing and how they fit into the politics of the time after having been asleep for 100 years. And the game is about how they cope with that and how the power structure of vampires in the hidden world of vampires in Seattle deals with that incredibly powerful character.
Mm-hmm. And, well, just to a bit more about it, what type of game it is, what kind of gameplay can people...
So, action RPG. The main character, being quite an old and powerful vampire, is quite good at fighting things, which Jay can talk about a lot more. But it is also a role-playing game. There is a lot of intrigue between that character with all of the other major players in the city, and it's a branching and changing story where you decide what sort of elder vampire you're portraying, and that changes how people react to you. So both roleplay and action. Mm-hmm.
So in the first one, which is Vampire Bloodlines, Masquerade, first one. It's not called the first one, but you know. in that one, we played a newbie that has just been bitten. And now we're going to play a very elder one, a very experienced vampire. How did that change the way you approach the game and the narrative?
Sure. So what happened with this is when Paradox approached us, the Chinese Room, I hope, relatively well known for narrative, for storytelling. And when Paradox approached us, we... sat down with them to figure out what sort of story we were trying to tell, because we're a very story-based company. And the going from a complete newbie in the world of vampires, a fledgling vampire in Bloodlines 1, and then learning about the world of vampires and growing and changing the world based on what you did, was a story that had already been told, and it's been told quite a lot in the tabletop role-playing game as well. And we wanted really a different take on it. And the idea of a character who has been around for a very, very long time, but is new to this place, new to Seattle, there's a really interesting thing that happens when you take such a powerful playing piece and you drop it into a new playing field. With all of these people in that world then react to this powerful character, this elder, and some of them... want to use that character. Some are waiting to see how that character is going to react and change the world. But if you think about it as the politics of Seattle is a pool, and you've just dropped not a small pebble, a massive boulder into that. And so our lead character here is a catalyst for change and upsets the entire power structure and power struggle of Seattle. And that's what our story is about. That over a few nights, that's what the story is about.
Just a few nights and everything goes.
Yep.
Let's see where it goes. And also, he or she, they are not on their own in their head.
Do you want to take a question?
Well, I would say this one's more narrative as well, but that's absolutely correct. So you are joined, and you discover this quite early on in the game, by this character called Fabian, who, for some reason, is a voice inside your head. As the story progresses, you'll learn that at some point, Fabian has died, and you're then going to have to go on essentially a bit of a detective mystery, trying to figure out who killed Fabian. But we go a little step further than that. He's not just a voice inside your head. We actually, when you go to sleep, you get to experience the world through Fabian's eyes. You get to play as Fabian, the Malkavian, and investigate your own death.
He's rhyming, too.
Yeah, he is.
Fabian the Malkavian.
He's that kind of guy. So we've essentially got this really old vampire who's just woken up and has been asleep for 100 years, so doesn't know modern life or Seattle or any of that. And then you've got Fabian, who is a Seattle native. He is about 100 years old, but he is absolutely fascinated with conspiracy theories, with life. He delights in how things work and what humans do and how they interact. And he's still very close to humanity. Whereas Fire, who is an old survivor of a character, doesn't really count humans as being particularly important anymore. Mortals, rather, as being particularly important. So you've got the two of them kind of complementing each other, and Fabian essentially acting as a kind of tour guide. But he's a Malkavian, and for people who know the background and know the RPG, Malkavians are known as either mad or prophets or visionaries or whatever you want to call them. His delusion, if it's a delusion, is he thinks he's a gumshoe detective. So you have a vintage vampire up against a guy who thinks he's a vintage detective, and he frames all of his experiences through that idea of being a detective. Whether he's right remains to be seen.
I really like that, because you do not do the fish out of water thing. You do fish back in water, but also with another fish.
Yes.
Let's call it
multiple
that.
Fish.
Yeah. So it's also a good way to, you know, help to introduce the world itself, because yeah, we cannot, you know, we cannot think that everyone who played the first game will play this. People maybe haven't played it before. How is it if I've never heard of it, which would be criminal? But there are people, we do not judge, that did not play the first part. But how do you plan on including everyone that maybe didn't get to play the first one?
So there are the first game, I think it's worth saying, is a similar story and a similar feel in a totally different city. There are lots of plot connections, but it's not a direct sequel, so you don't need to have played the first one. This is also obviously the computer game version of a very long-term tabletop role-playing franchise. So there's a lot of material out there, and there's lots of things that people who know those will hopefully pick up very rapidly on. But one of the reasons that we have Fabian there, and one of the, as you say, the kind of fish out of water thing that's going on, is you don't need to know anything about this world and this background, and about Seattle and about how vampires work in Seattle, because Fabian and Fire between them, because they both talk, will introduce concepts to you when they become important. For example, very early on in the game, and this is a real common thing for people who know about vampires, vampires can sleep for a very long time, torpor. If a vampire goes into a new city and the city's ruled by a vampire organization that's in charge of keeping everybody's secret, which is the masquerade of Vampire the Masquerade, if you go into a new city, it is only the correct thing to do to go and meet the prince of the city, the ruler of that city, and go, can I have permission to be here? Now, this is not a thing we'd expect a player to know at the beginning of the start of the game, but obviously that becomes important quite early, and so that concept of introduced, the concept of the prince, the concept of the ruling clan. So it's a drip feed of those key pieces of information that all you need to know to play. But there's a lot of stuff in the background that if you know the deeper lore and you know the original game and you know the tabletop game, you'll start to see connections and symbols and Easter eggs and all sorts.
I think it's really important to say that we're now working with White Wolf.
Oh, yeah.
Directly. So we have access to people who worked on the original board game and have stuck with it ever since. So
yeah.
Yeah. If you ever need a fact check, anything, it's just one phone call away. It's fantastic. It's such a good resource for us.
And it's been great to develop this story with them, because when we're going, oh, for this story, we need this kind of thing to happen, and we go to the lore masters of White Wolf and Paradox and go, does this work? And they go, well, no, not in the vampire lore. That thing can't happen. But how about this? It has the same effect, and we just twist it. So it's very, very much bound into the existing long-term.
Yeah, I mean, everything that happens in our game is now canon in this universe. So it's going forward. That's lovely. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. So we just talked about fighting would be more your area of expertise. Would you like to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So at the beginning of the game, you're going to choose one of the clans. you buy the base game, you're going to have a choice of four clans, and each of those clans has their own sort of unique sort of play style. So you've got the Bruja, who are your up close and personal brawlers. So they've got some really cool abilities like Lightning Strike, which I don't know if you've seen it, but it sort of allows you to paint an array of punches across a group of enemies. Mm. And you look like quickly like smack, 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 followed up by a real big haymaker, which will probably finish off anyone that you're fighting. Then you've got like the Banu Hakim, who are more of your stealthy prowlers who will sneak around and using their obfuscate abilities like Unseen Aura, which allows you to escape into the shadows.
And it's probably worth saying, even at the very beginning, because you are an elder, you start powerful.
Yeah,
you start 100%. Beyond the range of most, certainly all mortals that you meet, and most vampires that you meet. So you're already...
you're not doing the thing to me why I start really, really powerful and then I lose everything and I have to start
No, not at all. You start in your weakest form, that is true.
Mm-hmm.
You are already damn bad.
Your weakest form is already up there.
Okay.
We set the tone right from the beginning, and it was shown in the video that's playing for the people at home. There's a guard who comes out at you, and he's like, "What the hell's going on here?" You know, and... you get to smack him, and you see him flying. We really set the tone with that. Additionally, like I said, there's multiple more clans. You also have some additional abilities that are quite vampiric. So you've got access to telekinesis, which fire uses for multiple purposes. So that can be used in combat. You can grab enemies, pull them towards you. So say you're on a rooftop, and you want to see them plummet, just yank them off the edge. You can also use that to maybe manipulate bodies, so you don't want to get discovered when you're sneaking around. So you can pick someone up, drag them around with you. Maybe you use them as a human shield, hold them up.
Yep.
They can take the bullets for you. Additionally, maybe it's a more of a diversionary tactic, so picking up some bottles and throwing it. You know, that old chestnut, right?
And you have a lot of physicality generally, because we wanted to give you that impression of being a predator. And so your locomotion through the city of Seattle, the rooftops are your fastest way of getting around. You are superhuman. You can glide from rooftop to rooftop. You can scramble up pipes. You can make long jumps and dives and changes. But it does not look human.
Yeah.
You could do that stuff at the ground, but then people will start to ask questions. People will get upset. Eventually, the police will be called in. And you have just broken the masquerade that one vampire kind of immutable law of do not give away to humans that the supernatural exists. So you could move that path that fast on ground, but you don't. You keep to the rooftops, and you are the predator looking down at the humans in the city. And you have various reasons for predating on those humans, for drinking blood from those humans. There are... story reasons and game mechanics reasons for you seeking people of a particular type to hunt, to take off, draw off down an alley and then feed from.
It's worth mentioning, like, the masquerade, essentially, for people who don't know, it's the vampire's way of staying hidden. It's imperative for their survival. They know that if they were to be discovered, they would be outnumbered by the humans and outgunned, essentially. So they have to stay hidden. And so we have all these mechanics in the game that we encourage you to use in the right place. Don't use it in front of the pedestrians. You don't want to get caught. Essentially, the way that works, the Camarilla are watching you. So if you have too many infractions in a shorter amount of time, it's not like a big, long, extended thing. If this is more minutes and minutes gameplay, if you have too many infractions too quickly, what's going to happen is they're going to take you out.
Yeah.
Not that good.
Don't give the game away.
Okay. So I do have a question, because we, if you're at home, you've probably seen the material that we have. And I've seen the character walking through a very old, decrepit building. Mm-hmm. Probably people there that have been, I don't know, lying around there for longer because they're dead. Also rats and stuff. And he's barefoot. Do we get shoes?
Yes. So Fire, who can be a male or female character, the player character, wakes up in an abandoned building after, we quite quickly figure out, after 100 years. they are wearing what looks like it could be some kind of robe or maybe operating gown or something, like they've been experimented on. And they've got these weird scars on their arms, and they don't know why. So they don't know why they're shoeless, but they've woken up over 100 years. And yes, as you say, they are shoeless until they manage to find a place of safety in Seattle. Fabian, who we've talked about, helps guide them to somewhere where they can have a bit of a rest in safety. And they can put on something which doesn't make them stand out in the middle of Seattle. Because running across the middle of Seattle covered in bloody robes is a good way to start the police asking questions.
If it's not Halloween. Yeah. Yeah, because that worried me. Even if you are, you know, not dying as mortal people do, it would still be disgusting.
I'd like to speak a bit more to the outlooks, the outfits, though, because we've actually included a ton of different outfits. So every ability that you unlock gets you a new outfit. And those outfits have gameplay repercussions as well. So when you're out about talking to people in the city or even main characters, what you are wearing will affect the outcome of your conversation.
Yeah.
So we have a system, right, where to unlock the new abilities. So you can essentially take abilities from other clans and bring them into your main four abilities, right? And to do that, you have to collect resonated blood from around the city. And for those of you who don't know, they're essentially it's essentially like a currency that you're going to be collecting from drinking blood from these people. And you'll see them when you're looking at them with your vampiric senses. They'll sort of be glowing a color that matches the type of resonated blood. And if you feed on them, you'll collect an amount of that blood, and then you'll take that to a clan contact of the clan that you're interested in, right? And they will then allow you to drink some of their blood to help you regain this lost knowledge, which allows you to get these abilities. So then you get the ability, you get the outfit, and then the outfit helps you get other things further on. So it's a bit of a loop that's going on there.
So you've got to dress for the blood you want.
Well, exactly, because you've got to meet people who are feeling the mood that will give you the right sort of blood. And you go up to that person and you maybe have to push them over the edge into that mood. It may be that you want to seduce them and make them feel absolutely delighted at meeting you, and then you feed, because you want them in that state before you and if you're wearing the right outfit...
Flirting.
If you're wearing the right outfit, it may be easier to convince them. But if you're not wearing the right outfit, they may just tell you to get
off. And that plays in with the masquerade, right? Yeah. So if you go and flirt with a civilian, right, and they fall for you, they become absolutely besotted with you, you won't want to just feed on them in broad daylight right in front of the police or anyone, right? So obviously the simplest thing is to take them down an alleyway and have a little feast. another thing I wanted to mention that we've only announced recently at Gamescom is it's more than just outfits now. So you can customize your hair, you can customize your makeup, tattoos, and all sorts of things. Like, there's so many different types of piercings. And my absolute favorite is the eyes. We've gone absolutely bonkers with the eyes. You could make yourself into the darkest, nastiest looking vampire. It's awesome.
Also playing into the whole role-playing.
Exactly.
We've
got such a huge role-playing community within the World of Darkness. And I'm really hoping to see in the future people role-playing some of the characters. I was thinking about being Benny, who's the the current sheriff of Seattle.
And to play into the role-playing side of it, when you actually get into talking to the various characters you'll meet, these kind of pivotal figures that I talked about, the political... game, if you like. Rather than it being something like Paragon Renegade's sort of opinion system, every major character has their own viewpoint about who you are and what you are like and how you present yourself as the main character. So you could talk to that person and you could go up to them and say, I am an elder. I demand that you do what I want you to do because I've been around for 400 years. And obviously they'll have an opinion about that. Some of them might like that. Some of them will obviously react in a different way to that. Others, you might want to suck up to them and flatter them, and then they'll like you for that, and you'll start to get conversation options and behavior from them that's different. So it's a balancing act. How are you going to present yourself? Are you going to role play as this one type of character all the way through? I am this big character. Or are you going to be a bit more chameleon and play this kind of game? And then you get into situations where you have a room full of people and they ask you a question and you have to pick a response as any other dialogue. If I pick that response, those two people will be really pleased with it, but that person will... So there's this juggling game of... this game of politics in a city of vampires. And all of that has consequences in all sorts of ways.
Also, they hold their grudges longer.
Oh, yeah.
They don't die.
They hold so much grudges against me. I'm always being the... I'm not going to say it's rude, okay?
You said they hold them longer because they don't die. And in normal circumstances... It's rare for vampires to die often because they're quite good at staying alive. Funnily enough, in these 9 days, the body count goes up quite high. It's quite
a violent few days.
Yeah,
it's peculiar, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, oh yeah.
Since we're nearly at the end, I do have one other question I want to ask you. Because if I do interviews, I'm always interested in what you guys would like to talk about that no one asked you before. Ooh. Not because I want to be original, but I really want you guys to be able to talk about something that's maybe on your mind.
Can I jump in there? So I think Bloodlines 1, right? A lot of people played it, right? And they absolutely love it. It's become a cult classic. But if you talk to everyone, they all have their own sort of thing that they took away from it. And something that they grabbed onto and they love, right? And I feel like that is what I want people to get out of this. It's a game for so many different types of people. We've made it so it's fun for people who just really like your narrative adventure games, right? But on the flip side, we've also made something for the action brawlers out there who really like some fast-paced combat. I just want people to have their own experience. Try it, please. Before you judge it, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
And for me, it's more of a kind of game dev general thing, I think. I love characters, I love narrative, I love working with actors, and this game has developed a lot. We've been adding content kind of constantly as we discover what works, what doesn't work, what we think we need to put in. We have some, I think, very memorable characters, and it has been an absolute delight to be in the voiceover studios with the actors and give them challenges, things that they didn't think that they could do and things that we didn't ask them to do when we cast them. In particular, the role of Fabian, and we are not announcing actors yet, but the voice actor has to do real clever, fast footwork all the way through. He does some incredible work. As do many of the actors. It's just when you play the game, you will see he has to be dexterous in a way that you would not expect. And all of those actors have delivered such amazing work. So they were all laughing at things and giggling at things in the studio. And there are some characters who we will record, and everybody back in the development studio will just stop everything and listen to the lines that come to that character, because they're either amazing or scary, or funny, or whatever it is. But that's been a joy to work with that cast.
Can I just say, Ian's done such an amazing job of writing these characters.
And everybody else.
I wet myself laughing with some of the characters, especially, I'm just going to say it, the romancing. Oh, it's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. You will be wetting yourself laughing.
I will say, it's a team who did the writing. It's not me.
Ian's team, sorry, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you guys very much for talking about Vampire Bloodlines 2. All the best for your game. Thanks so much for being here.